exit strategies, why we need them, who does it apply to, and what is the best exit strategy. So in this video, I'm going to cover off exactly what they look like. I'm going to share with you exactly what my plan looks like when it comes to an exit strategy and why it's important you think about this before you go and build out a property portfolio. If you're interested in what my thoughts are, definitely keep watching. Hey guys, my name is Ravi and welcome back to Personal Finance with Ravi Sharma. If you're new here, smash that subscribe button because I talk about real estate, cryptocurrency, and financial freedom. Now it's important that we go out there, we build our asset base and property portfolio, or the machine as I like to refer to it. But it's also important that you know why you have this machine. Yes, we can go out there and say, well, I built this machine because I wanted to go out there and get financial freedom, retire early. But now you find yourself with a couple of properties, a lot of debt, and you're like, now what happens? So I'm gonna jump into my whiteboard here, break down a few scenarios as to what you could do and how you can achieve financial freedom, passive income, and then retire early. Now, before I continue, a bunch of you watch these videos, which is awesome, but you haven't subscribed yet. So if you can, just smash that subscribe button because it helps support the channel and it also pushes these videos out to more people. Now with that, let's continue. So we're effectively looking at exit strategies. And there's really three methods that you can take. One is you sell everything. Two, you sell some and you keep some debt. And then you've got three, which is don't ever sell. Now, which one is better than the other? Well, I'd urge you to keep an open mind until we get to the end of this video, because there's a couple of things here that may challenge the way you think about this, and it could often mean a better result long term. So option one is selling everything. So in this example, we're using a property portfolio worth $3 million, and your debt is probably $1 million. Now, how I got to that is you've probably built your wealth in, say, your 20s, 30s, and 40s, and now you're looking at your portfolio in your 40s, 50s, 60s, depending on when you started. And now you started with $1 million worth of debt, and your properties were probably worth about 1.5. So you go ahead and sell for $3 million. Now, depending on your tax bracket, you're also gonna have to pay taxes and some costs, which would mean $500,000 for the costs and taxes, and then $1 million because you still have some debt on the properties. So now you're left with $1.5 million cash. Now, if you actually think about it, it's quite impressive to get to that point, because if you were simply saving your money, I don't think you get close to that number. So in this case, if you put the $1.5 million into a bank account and you earn, say, 4%, you'd make $60,000 per year, but your principal remains the same. So it's still worth $1.5 million in, say, 10 years' time. And again, yes, the argument there is inflation is eroding the dollar, so it's probably buying you a lot less. But in this case, what we're focusing on is the principal not growing and you're earning an income of $60,000. Now, that $60,000 would also be taxed, so that's something to keep in mind. Alternatively, what some people might do is you use the 1.5 that you got from your investment portfolio and you'd buy your dream house debt-free. Now, you might go on to argue, well, 1.5 is not enough for my dream house. And this is why it's important you start with the end in mind. Now, it's also very difficult to know what your dream house is going to cost you, because you're more likely not going to buy your dream house anytime soon. So when you're thinking about a dream house, always account for inflation, knowing that property prices will increase, and then have a rounded figure at that point. So if I think I'm gonna buy a place for $2 million, I'm probably gonna think it's worth $3 to $4 million, and that way I could have either a nice surprise by actually overshooting and then having some left over, or I'm actually managing my expectations and will be in line to actually purchase what I wanna purchase and not be disappointed. So in this case, if you're looking at this right now, $1.5 million, especially in Sydney, doesn't buy you much. So those are effectively what your options look like if you go with that. Now, option two is you sell some and then keep some debt. So in this case, if we use the same example, $3 million worth of assets, your debt is $1 million, and you decide instead of selling everything, I'm gonna sell 50% of this. So you go ahead and you sell some of the properties worth $1.5 million in value. The debt that's associated with it is about 500K. So after costs, the 1.5 million you get in revenue, you have to minus your taxes, which would maybe come to about 250K, and then minus the debt that you have, which leaves you with $750,000. It makes sense because in the first example, you sold 100%, which gives you 1.5. In this case, you sell 50% and it gives you 750,000. So you guessed it, if you go and put that in the bank, you're earning half of that, which is 30K per year before taxes. And if you go ahead and say buy the $1.5 million house, you will go in and say, put $750,000 towards it, and then you would finance the rest of it. If you went ahead and bought, say, a property for $3 million as your dream house, you would then have sufficient amount to pay for your stamp duty as well as your 20% deposit if you choose to do that, and it at least gets you into the property. But it's not debt-free, so you still carry some debt over there. Now, the reason why this could be a viable option for someone is because the $1.5 million that you still have in assets keeps growing. So if you assume a 5% annual growth rate, that would mean that the machine is still growing by $75,000 every single year, and it compounds. So it could be 75 this year, could be 77 the year after, could be 80 the year after, and it keeps going higher. So in this case, you might find that right now, if you bought it, you might be negative cash flow slightly, if not neutral, in the next year or two. But if you fast forward that purchase into year 15, you will now be earning positive cash flow from that property. So in this case, what you could also earn is not only the equity that's going up, which is tax-free, but you also have the cash flow that comes from these properties. So in this case, to hold the $1.5 million worth of debt, it actually doesn't cost you anything, in fact, gives you money. And the reason this is so important is because in the first example, if you went and simply used all of the money you made, you put it in a bank account and you earned some interest, you would say, okay, great, like I'm earning interest on it, that's my income, I get taxed, that's it. But the principle remains the same. In this case, if I sell half and I've got the other half there, that $1.5 million worth of house value, that continues to increase, which is tax-free at 75K and grows, plus I get the cash flow. And that cash flow can either go towards my lifestyle or it can go towards my principal place of residence where I still hold some debt. And that can help me supercharge me paying down my mortgage. So far, if you're with me, you're looking at option two and saying, that seems like the better option. But again, everyone's situation is different. You might just go, well, I don't want the peace of mind. I don't want to have debt at all. I'm okay taking 4% from the bank and my house is already paid off because I bought it earlier. Okay, no problems. But you can see how there's different situations and different risk appetites that would dictate which option is better. Now we come to option three, which is I bought all these properties, but I'm never gonna sell. Now in this case, the value of the machine is $3 million and the debt is still $1 million. So at 5%, you're making $150,000 per year in equity growth. Assuming that the property portfolio is gonna grow at 5%, you're making 150K. Now for the cash flow element, you're probably making about $30,000 a year just from positive cash flow. So you look at this scenario and say, okay, if in scenario one, I have no debt, and I make $60,000, but my principal remains the same, if I get rid of all of that debt, that's all I'm left with. But if I don't do anything and I'm okay keeping that debt, the debt services itself because the rental income is more than sufficient to pay for all my costs, then I'm making on top of that $30,000. So it tells me that I'm okay with having that debt because it produces income for me. That's a positive cash flow property. So in this case, my principal is growing at 150K, which is more than I could probably save at this point. And I'm also getting the cash flow, which means I can enjoy my lifestyle. And it doesn't matter that I open up my bank account and it says, oh, minus $1 million, because that $1 million is taken care of by somewhere else. And that's that passive income coming through to pay for a debt that you have. But in this scenario, it leaves you that question, which is, what about my principal place of residence? If I want to purchase that, how am I supposed to do it when all my money is tied up in these properties? The other question you have is, what about other investments? Do you have anything else that you're investing into? You may have a super. Depending on your age, you might be able to use your super to pay off your principal place of residence. And more options open up depending on how much choice and how early you started, and also when you're looking at this. But above all, it's peace of mind. Now, we've been challenged largely around not having debt, not carrying debt for a long time. It's really bad for you. But if you actually think about this logically, you have a machine that keeps growing at 150K per year in this example, and you also have the cash flow to attend to all of your holding costs. It would be like you running a business. You're running a business that grows in equity, and then you go, okay, but the cash flow, like I'm not physically there, but it works by itself. So it's like owning a cafe. The cafe's brand is growing because it might be featured in newspapers, it might be on Instagram and influencers are coming through. So you're like, okay, if I decided to sell this business at some point, it would be worth so much more. But also I'm holding some debt, but that's taken care of because yes, I've got to pay salaries, yes, I've got to pay rent, but all of that money is still coming through because the business is generating cash. Now, when you think about it, you're like, that's a fantastic business. And it's the exact same thing when it comes to this. When it comes to the property portfolio, you have to think of it like a business. So what does my plan look like? Well, my plan has a bit of option two and option three. Now, ideally, I would like to be earning 300K a year after my expenses. Now, that may be before taxes, and so I'm left with about half of that. But if my LVR position on all my investments is less than 50%, I'm very, very comfortable holding that debt for a really long time. As I understand, the assets appreciate, the debt depreciates in technical value, given that inflation is eroding the value of that dollar. In addition to that, I would like to have a debt-free home. So I might find myself in a position where in the next 10 to 15 years, I decide, okay, this is the plan, this is how it's gonna work, and if all things stay equal, I'm gonna have to go and sell some of my properties to then fund my principal place of residence, and again, who knows how much that's gonna cost, and I wanna be able to do that without any debt. Now, I could go down that path if I've given up on, you know, creating a bigger machine, creating a bigger moat for my kids and, you know, future generations. But I could also be in the camp where I say, okay, well, I'm okay with this debt because everything's being taken care of by the passive investments and I'm still working. I love what I do and that's why you see me on YouTube, but I also run a full-time buyer's agency. We have more than 20 full-time staff now, which is really exciting. And we've just opened up our brand new office in Macquarie Park in Sydney. So if you're interested in knowing how everything works, definitely go check out this video. It makes so much sense as to how the process is, how simple it is, and why buying property now is so different to what it was like 10 years ago. It's honestly very simple if you have the right team around you. Now, the key is you need to build a machine. And in my case, I could go in and say, okay, each property is renting for $450 per week. I would need 15 of those to get to my 300K goal from rental income. Now that's on today's terms. Obviously there's rental increases if you bought in the right locations, and 450 per week means you've probably bought a house that's maybe worth $350,000 to $400,000. You could equally just double up and say, well, I wanna make $900 per week from each property. That means I need 7 of those. And again, borrowing capacities are going to be the biggest hurdle for most people, including yourself if you're watching this, where you're questioning, how do I even get to that much? And really, it's two things. One is you need to be able to take on debt, and two, you need to have a machine that provides you the equity or at least have the cash on hand available. You could also go, well, okay, that's Ravi's goal, but what's my goal? Maybe it's 100K. So you go, okay, I can adjust the numbers, or I could go in and say, I want to achieve 150K, but really, I only need 100. So when you do that, you can go in and say, in this example, I've said buy 20, you can sell 5 later, and then you've still got the 15, and that's allowing you to retire with the income that you wanted. So you overshoot, and then you can go and sell some of those investments and then keep the ones that give you the highest cash flow. I hope this has made a lot of sense to you guys. Exit strategies are very important. It's almost like, why would you enter something without having a plan of how to get out? And that's why you need the strategy, and that's why it's important you get the right team as well. I hope you guys have enjoyed this video. If you have an idea for the next video you want to see, definitely comment down below what you want to see, and I'll make sure to make that as well for you. I hope you have enjoyed this video, and if you have, smash that like button. It helps support the channel, and I'll catch you guys soon. Thanks, guys.